Welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's Daily Politics Podcast. I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by Katie Balls and James Forsyth to discuss Michael Gove's latest crusade. Here he was on the radio earlier this morning denouncing social media.
And we've also got to stand up against the way in which social media corrupts and distorts both reporting and decision-making.
So, Katie, what was he so upset about?
So this is a kind of a problem that's been brewing over the past week, which goes back to the committee stage, which is still going, of the EU withdrawal bill, an amendment the Green Party's Caroline Lucas made, which asked the government to put an amendment in or approve an amendment which would recognise that animals are sentient beings that feel pain.
So this is a Green amendment saying, does the government agree that animals are sentient beings that feel pain?
Yeah, and try and have that recognised in this bill. The amendment was defeated, and that led to some headlines which suggested that this was because the Tories did not recognise that animals are sentient beings. This is not the case. They didn't vote for it to be recognised in this specific bill, but that's partly because they argue it is already recognised in British law, and also they wanted to keep this bill clean. But since then, partly through social media, as Michael Gove touched on, and through some misleading headlines, it has become one of the biggest stories in politics, perhaps one that's been read the most this year. A story basically suggesting the Tories don't believe that animals feel pain, which obviously fits very well into the narrative that the Tories are a nasty party that want to use Brexit to make this cruel world.
Now, James, Michael Gove blames social media, but the headline in question, the Tories have voted that animals can't feel pain as part of the EU bill, But James, I mean, Michael Gove blames social media, but the headline in question, which says the Tories have voted that animals can't feel pain as part of the EU bill, marking the start of our anti-science Brexit. Stirring words, false words, but they came from a newspaper, The Independent. They didn't come from social media. So is Michael Gove pointing the finger in the wrong direction?
Well, I think this whole episode is very revealing for us, because the kind of classic political journalist thinks that the big story this week has been the budget. That is what is exercising people. What's this little thing on social media? Actually, it turns out, as Katie said, this thing on social media has been seen by far more people than the details of the budget.
2 million people, I read.
Yes. And I think this is one of the things that the Tory party was lulled into a false sense of security by the 2015 general election, when Labour did lots of stuff on social media, you know, Ed Miliband being interviewed by Russell Brand, all that stuff, and it didn't seem to make any difference. And David Cameron confidently declared at the Tory conference in 2015 that, you know, Twitter and Britain aren't the same thing. What I think the Tories are now finding is that the technology has moved on. More and more people are getting their news just online. And so these stories go viral, and they really affect people. And I think it also shows something else. It shows how re-toxified the Tory brand has become. I mean, this is the modern-day version of what's that Bridget Jones quote, that the Labour Party stands for single mothers and Nelson Mandela, and the Tory Party stand for telling off all the presenters on the Today programme and being mean. I mean, I think this is the problem, which is people, the Tories' reputational problem is shown by how keen people are to believe this. And I think you also come on to another problem, which is the Tories have, in the last few days, managed to get various of the celebrities who tweeted this out to their kind of millions of followers to retract. But it's too late because, you know, as the old quote has it, you know, the lie has it is halfway around the world before the truth has got its boots on.
Now, Katie, the Tories are particularly sensitive about this because, as James is saying, they think this is one of the reasons that they've lost their majority. I was talking to somebody involved in the 2017 campaign a few days ago, and he was saying that he compared it to generals from the First World War being used to fight the Second World War. His point being that the terms of engagement, the rules of political combat had moved so much in that short space of time between 2015 and 2017, that the Tories did not have the kit or the ammunition to win arguments, which one now does via social media. So I guess we can see behind Michael Gove's frustration a cry of pain, knowing that his party is rather bad at getting its message across using these new techniques.
Yeah, completely. And I think this story particularly touches on, you could say the Tories have two Achilles heels, they're kind of on both legs, one being their social media strategy and the other being that they've really isolated lots of kind of metropolitan and also younger voters in the past election, because first of the social media strategy was not up to it, completely paled compared to Labour's. And secondly, there was definitely a feeling on issues that they didn't realise were going to be big issues, such as Theresa May saying, you know, at an event that she personally always had been supported fox hunting. Mm. Played out so badly because Labour managed to kind of weaponise it on social media and also not putting, you know, banning ivory sales in the manifesto. And
so animals, therefore, have got a greater political potency than the Tories had thought. And the fox hunting, the Tories like to think of fox hunting as being the obsession of the hard left. But in fact, it's a proxy for how cruel and cold-hearted these Tories are.
Exactly. It's completely what reinforces this idea of the nasty Tories. Mm-hmm. Were two kind of slips, which they hadn't even really thought about. They were a bit more inadvertent by the Tories. But then Labour managed to use to say, hey, look, don't vote for Theresa May. She wants to bring back fox hunting. And if she has a big majority, she'll be able to do it. And social media is how these things manage to spread. And actually, if you look at it, you know, recent Tory conference, there's little reason to suggest the Tories are really getting to grips with it now. There was a very embarrassing Tory Instagram feed where they had all these awkward photos of Michael Fallon on stage.
And Damian Green watching his laptop. That was another one. Wasn't
exactly.
It? Could have been a bit more risque than we thought at the time. But James, you know, let's continue with our spirit of quotations. Enoch Powell once said that a politician complaining about the press is like a ship's captain complaining about the sea. Isn't Michael Gove simply complaining about the sea?
Yeah, look, I don't see how. I think what the Tories need is to start rebutting this stuff much faster. Mm. And I think one of the things they need to do is they need to start, you know, finding the kind of nodes that are spreading this information and getting in touch with them and saying that actually you're not right.
So please take down this misleading headline.
Please take that, Or getting onto the celebrities who are sending this out to their millions of followers saying, no, this story isn't correct. I mean, there is another broader problem for the Tories here, which is the stuff that is most authentic on social media isn't the stuff that you pay someone to produce. It's the stuff that people produce themselves. And because Corbynism is this cause, and a cause that particularly appeals to younger people who are more digitally savvy, they are winning on that social media battleground because they are producing their own stuff. A little bit like the SNP were winning in Scotland in 2014 because they were producing, they had all these very committed, dedicated supporters who produced their own content that then went viral. So I think this is a very difficult situation for the Tories to deal with.
Katie, Theresa May is off to Brussels today to advance what she calls the Eastern Partnership. So is she hoping to find some allies in what Donald Rumsfeld used to call New Europe?
Yeah, I think we saw last week with her speech, calling out Russia and saying that she would not stand for their interference across the world.
She's buttering up the pools, was she? Is that the idea?
I think that was the hint. Even though she went for strong language with perhaps little action promised, I think that was an attempt. And I think this is a continuation of that today. But also, I think what people are going to be keeping a very close eye on is what's happening with the Brexit bill, because a lot of this is preparing to try and get the green light at the next meeting. And there is reports across now that the $40 billion offer has been approved, and obviously she'll be seeing Donald Tusk today, and there's going to be a suggestion that maybe she will be saying we're ready with the money, but there's still a big problem even if they accept the money, which is Ireland.
So James, this is part of a theme. I mean, technically speaking, the government's supposed to be only dealing with Michel Barnier and the EU when it comes to Brexit talks, but it's been doing quite a lot of these bilaterals now. So are we seeing a sort of parallel charm offensive going on here, pointing out what Britain can offer the rest of Europe in ways more than financial?
Yeah, I think that one of the reasons why Theresa May is ramping up the rhetoric on Russia is it carries this implicit message with it, which is we are part of European security even after we leave. So let's not have an acrimonious breakup because you want the UK to carry on contributing to NATO missions to defend the eastern flank of a continent. You still want Britain's security services and GCHQ to be helping deal with kind of Russian subversion and interference in your own internal democratic affairs. So I think that is one of the things that the UK government is trying to remind everyone that yes, you can try and screw as much money out of the UK as possible in these negotiations, but think of all the other things that the UK does for Europe. You know, David Davis has taken to talking about how much less the UK would spend if it spent the EU average on defence and overseas aid, for example.
And Katie, the government's quiet coalition partner in that elevated status, the DUP, are having their conference this weekend. Is this something we should be interested in?
Yeah, well, the DUP are going global. This is their big conference. There's much excitement. And there's also lots of reports about how what was often a small conference, you could say proportionally, which got little attention from Westminster, is now becoming a very big event. I think they've accredited about 200 journalists. You've got BBC's political editor heading there.
Quite right.
And I think, quite rightly, the DUP are fully embracing this. And they're quite excited to kind of have the attention. And I'm sure there'll be some interesting moments that we'll read about on Sunday.
But they've been quite quiet so far. They've got a lot of power at the DUP. I mean, you know, if they say so, they can just withdraw the government's majority. They seem to have been remarkably well behaved so far. It's not as if the headlines are full of what the DUP wants to change the law on this, that, or the next thing.
Yeah, I think so long as they're getting what they want,
which is money,
financially, and also with specific policies, they don't feel the need to start shouting or creating too much of a problem for the government. I think what they're trying to show is that if the government does what they want, they are not a problem. They can rely on them. The problem will be if the government start going off or not listening to what they're saying in terms of the budget or money. But I think so far, the government are realising that you kind of need to do what the DUP want, as they saw with that negotiation.
And meanwhile in Dublin, James, the Irish Taoiseach, who's been one of Theresa May's tormentors recently over Brexit, is running into some trouble himself.
Yes, there's a row about his justice minister, which could cause his confidence and supply arrangement with Fianna Fáil to fall apart. Mm-hmm. And you could end up, possibly, it's not impossible, you could end up in this ridiculous situation where on the day of this crunch Brexit summit, where Ireland is going to be one of the biggest deals, Ireland could be in the middle of a general election campaign or even going to the polls.
And would that be to Theresa May's advantage? Because the Irish, of all the countries in the EU, have been the one member state that is threatened to veto. There is no veto, it's QMV. But still, I mean, a lot of trouble from the government is coming from Dublin. So if their tormentor is being compromised, is that good or bad?
Well, I think, as always with this, I think the danger for the British government is that in an Irish election campaign, that the rhetoric will be ramped up and that the signs will compete as to who can draw the brightest red line on this issue. Now, there is an intriguing thing, which is if you talk to British officials very close to the negotiation, they still think that ultimately, when it comes down to it, the Irish issue won't derail moving on to phase two. But they think that ultimately the Commission and the other member states will, if the deal is agreed on citizens' rights and the money, will say, hang a second, they'll have a discreet word and try and persuade the Taoiseach that, Leo Varadkar, that this deal, that this issue is best dealt with in phase two. The Irish, they know that this is their moment of maximum leverage. Mm.
But well, they're right, aren't they? Yeah, I mean, because they'll be shoved back into line by the EU pretty soon if they get what they want in the
moment. But I think that when you look at what Varadkar wants, everyone talks about how the DUP are why that the British government the UK government could not agree to this. I don't think any UK government could agree to what the Irish appear to be demanding at the moment, which is that in effect Northern Ireland, that in effect you create a customs border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK.
James and Katie, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes Store. And if you're in London on Monday, then do join James and I. We're having a panel discussion on the future of the Conservative Party, or I guess lack thereof. We're going to be joined by Priti Patel, Anthony Seldon, Sam Gima, and Suella Fernandez. Tickets are available on the Spectator website. Thanks for listening, and my thanks to Nick Hilton, who produced this podcast.